Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the WGN Skyline studio, joined by Kim Fox, the state's attorney of Cook County. Madam State's Attorney, welcome to the Skyline studio.
Thank you. Thank you for the breathtaking views this morning.
And once again, we have to talk about them because it's radio, you know? It's, no, it is, even on a little overcast morning, yeah. It's still very stunning to look out over Lake Michigan and Navy Pier. I wanted to have you on this morning to talk about something that you announced last week, which is a significant step as part of the comprehensiveness of the new law that taking effect January 1st that legalizes adult use of cannabis. And that's the criminal justice component. Mm-hmm. As I said before we went on the air here, that you were, I think, in many respects, kind of a deal closer on this because there were a lot of concerns about issues involving expungement and how this was going to be done and does it go far enough, those kinds of things. My reading of the law, and this was one of my concerns, was the fact that when revenues start coming in, the first cut before the state would see any tax money would basically go to the reviews over records of expungement. Mm-hmm. And this kind of seems like a pretty good win-win situation that you announced. Why don't you explain what this deal is?
So this deal is we are working with the Non-For-Profit Code for America, who will come in and has the technological resources to be able to help us identify from ISP, Illinois State Police records, people who are eligible to have their records expunged. I think the difference in Illinois and the other places where legalization came to be was that we put this on the front end of the bill. People were legalizing marijuana and then trying to figure out what to do for past harms after the fact. And so the legislation recognized that for people who had convictions for 30 grams or less would have the ability to have those convictions vacated. Code for America coming in takes a lot of the heavy lift off of jurisdictions like Cook, which has a large population, by being able to go in and identify who those folks are, by generating the paperwork that's necessary for us to take into court, and then we then take the rest of that in and ask for these convictions to be vacated. And so it will allow what we would call automatic expungement without people having to come in, fill out paperwork,
file,
pay a fee, file. All of that effort will be taken on by the state's attorney's office.
Do we know how many people we're talking about here? Because I believe I saw statewide estimate of perhaps 700,000 people.
I think we're trying to get a clearer focus of that. The estimates that were bantied about in Springfield was about 770,000 records, and how many of those records are related to individuals. And so we've seen numbers that say it's about 300,000 individuals. Cook County, we estimate, has about 72% of the statewide records or people.
How long of a process is this?
Yeah, the beauty of Code for America is once we get the infrastructures hooked up where they can get the information from the Illinois State Police, they have the capacity to be able to review thousands of records within minutes. And so if you did not have the benefit of them, having to go pull the work, get the paperwork together, file it would be onerous in months. With their help, we're going to be able to do this far more expeditiously. And so we're going to get the first batch going in short order and be able to really estimate how quickly we're able to do it.
Why is expungement so important?
It's hugely important because the collateral consequences of a conviction have long-term effects. The ability to get a job. You know, there's a box on employment applications that asks, have you ever been convicted of a crime? Now, the research is clear that people who have those convictions are far less likely to get employment than someone who doesn't. The ability for young people, particularly when we talk about cannabis use, where people try it out in college and you get this arrest, to be able to get financial aid, to be able to get scholarships, the ability to get housing. So the collateral consequences are far-reaching. And now that it's going to be legal, you know, there are people like John Boehner who's going to make millions of dollars. I mentioned John Boehner.
The former Republican Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives.
That's right, who is now an investor in a major cannabis company, are going to be able to make millions of dollars off of this, while the young person who has, you know, precluded from being able to get scholarships or precluded to get a job has to be saddled with that conviction. And so it rights the ship. It doesn't feel just or equitable that something that
is
now
also
legal.
Let's face it too, the disproportionate people
Absolutely.
Of color aspect on this.
Listen, the war on drugs, make no mistake, had a devastating impact on poor communities of color, largely Black and Latino communities. And, you know, usage rates of marijuana are equal across populations. In Chicago, you were four times more likely, however, to be arrested and convicted for marijuana usage. And so it's finding a way to make it more equitable, to be able to say, now that this is legal, those who had been shut out before have an opportunity to participate and contribute to our tax base.
Well, and as I said, too, social justice component of this was vitally important.
Absolutely.
This wasn't just about tax money and lighting up legal weed.
Absolutely. I think, again, lessons learned throughout history about what happens when communities that have been devastated by government policy, and then, you know, we change that policy and other people get to flourish. And, you know, the social justice component isn't just to make us feel better, right? There is that it's fair and right. But I think all boats rise when we're able to allow people who've been locked out to be able to participate. And those neighborhoods, the neighborhoods that I see that are most devastated by violence, that are most devastated by economic disinvestment, are the same ones that I think will benefit the most by being able to have these records expunged.
How long of a time frame are we looking at?
So the law takes effect January 1st, and so that, you know, opens the,
right,
the window. What we're trying to do now by announcing this partnership, working with Code for America, introducing them to the state police and other partners, is to get the mechanics worked out before that January 1st deadline. Our goal is to, as soon as the clock strikes midnight, to be able to start the first batch of these, because we know there are tens of thousands of them that we know we're going to have to touch. We want to get this done as quickly as possible.
Is there anything being set up in the court system for kind of an expungement court?
We've been talking. So I announced back in January, even before the legislation was fully developed, that the state's attorney's office was going to be seeking to vacate convictions in anticipation of possible legalization. So we sat down with Chief Judge Evans and discussed with him what that would look like. We sat with the clerk of the court, Dorothy Brown, and said, you know, what are the mechanics? And so those are ongoing conversations. They are committed to this work. And again, the hope is, and anticipation is, that by the time January 1st comes along, we'll be able to say, you know, that we have a call dedicated just to doing this work.
We're speaking with Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, here in the WGN Skyline studio with Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. We were talking about the as part of the legalization of adult use cannabis, the issue of expungement of these low-level possession cases. I wanted to expand things a little bit, as I think you knew I would.
Yes, of course.
This has been an interesting time for you in the state's attorney's office. Already a number of people announcing to challenge you in the Democratic primary. About a week ago was the appointment of a special prosecutor in the Jussie Smollett case. Looking back, do you have any regrets on how you handled this thing?
You know, we look forward to fully cooperating with the special prosecutor. He's reached out to our office already, and conversations have already begun. I think what I've always said is that if there are lessons to be learned for the way that this case was handled, we will absolutely learn them, adhere to them, and do better. I will always acknowledge that there's an opportunity for us to do better. But what I remind folks is that this is an office that handles about 40,000 felony cases a year, about 250,000 misdemeanor cases a year. And the dedicated men and women of the state's attorney's office handle everything from low-level offenses, but quite honestly are prioritizing violent crime in this county. And so, you know, we'll learn the lessons that this teaches us, but we'll continue to work on behalf of the people of Cook County to keep our community safe.
When people say how angry they are about this case and the fact that he claims to be exonerated, and that at one point you said, you know, you had the goods on him, and then we see the charges dropped. Understanding you said your priority was on violent crime, but nevertheless, there's also kind of that being a Chicagoan, having this rubbed in your face kind of matter, especially among claims that this was worn by people who were Donald Trump supporters, which, if you wanted to, you know, cast a wide net in Chicago, it wouldn't be too hard to find the people wearing MAGA hats. But I mean, when people are get kind of viscerally angry, what do you tell them?
Listen, I'm a lifelong Chicagoan too, and I wear my Chicago pride just as everyone else. But I run a criminal justice system that has seen far too many people in our system for nonviolent offenses, while those who are wreaking havoc on communities where, you know, children can't go out to play, the elders, you know, we had a man a couple years ago who was shot and killed in his front lawn mowing his grass. That's where our focus is. And so I understand the vitriol and the ire, and I certainly want to continue to have people have trust in the justice system and how we treat people.
But you know, this has raised issues of trust.
Yes. And which is why, from the very beginning, we have said that we welcomed a non-political review of how we've done this work. I said that in the first week, and I continue to say that now, because trust is paramount for us to be able to do this work. It's how we're able to increase conviction rates while people feel comfortable coming and cooperating with us. It's also allowed us to talk about, you know, how our office operates, how we treat folks who are charged with nonviolent low-level offenses. You know, we have one of the largest expansions in our diversion programs, where we deal with cases that could be dealt with in the court system outside of the court system. In this year alone, we've diverted more people away from the criminal justice system than we did in all of 2016, and we're just in the third quarter. And so these are conversations that, while sparked by anger and curiosity and frustration, that I think allows for us to talk about what is it that we're trying to do with the justice system? How are we trying to use our limited resources, particularly in a county that's been ravaged by violence?
Is that message getting across, though?
You know, I think it takes continually talking about it.
I mean, just given kind of the unique nature of this case.
Yeah, I think it, the more we talk about it, the message gets across. I've yet to go anywhere where people would say that we don't have a violent crime problem, or would say that the allegations in this particular case were stupid and frustrating, but didn't merit, say, a prison sentence. And what's that space in between? And so I think being able to talk about it, being able to answer the questions about what we do, why we do, how we do it, the message comes across. But we have a lot of work to do. I think there was a lot of continual coverage of this and a lot of confusion. And again, the responsibility is not on the public. It is on me as an elected official to be able to tell who we are, what we are, and why we do what we do.
Well, and that's certainly part of the reelect campaign.
That's right. That's right.
And you do have the Democratic endorsement. But yet people are, I mean, the number of candidates who are looking or who have announced, they feel that there's a vulnerability here.
Listen, I think if we were talking about one issue, that perhaps that gives someone a sense of, hey, I can do this. But if we expand and talk about the fact that our Conviction Integrity Unit is a national model right now, a couple years ago, the sad reality was Cook County was known as the false confession capital of the United States. In the last 2.5 years, we have vacated the convictions of almost 80 people who were wrongfully convicted. If we talk about the strategic ways in which we've been dealing with gun violence, the police superintendent just announced today that gun violence and homicides have continued to go down. All the reforms that we've been doing since December of 2016 has helped us be able to focus our attention on violence. Our Gun Crime Strategies Unit is the first of its kind here in Cook County, where we took attorneys out of the courtroom, put them in our most violent police districts, working with CPD, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and the FBI. And our convictions around the drivers of violence have continued to skyrocket. And so I get very excited about the fact that, you know, we're the most transparent office in the country, the first prosecutor's office in the country who put every bit of case level data of felonies on our open data portal. So when people ask me, hey, I think you treated this person different than you treated someone else, they have the access and ability to go to our website and look and see, how do we treat people with class 4 felonies? How do we treat people, say, with disorderly conduct? So you can look at that. And so the full record, the full breadth of what we've been able to do here and the results make me very excited to engage in the conversation with anybody who's willing to have it, whether on the campaign trail or in the community.
That's Kim Fox. She is the Cook County State's Attorney. Madam Prosecutor, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.